I do have the Slido going again, if in case anyone wants to use the anonymous questions. Today we are going to focus on the LSE reduction formula, which is a formula that relates scattering amplitude, right? Interested in? This is a scattering amplitude. It's the amplitude for some initial state to evolve in time to be some final state. So here, this is in the Heisenberg picture. And our main result today will be a relationship between this scattering amplitude and a vacuum expectation value of a time-ordered product of field operators. So the LSE reduction formula relates these two things. This is what we're interested in computing. Our goal for the class is to figure out what happens if we have a relativistic quantum scattering process. We send in some particles, and we want to measure what comes out when both quantum mechanics and special relativity are important. This is our goal for the class. We specify our theory in terms of a Lagrangian that's formulated in terms of fields. So this object is easier to compute. So that's why this result is useful. It takes what we're interested in computing physically and relates it to something that's more directly related to our formulation of the theory. So that's where we're going to get today. And tomorrow we will finish the calculation. So this is a vacuum expectation value of a time-ordered product of fields in an interacting theory. So here omega is the ground state of the interacting theory. And in general, if we change the Hamiltonian, we'll change the ground state. So we discussed the ground state of the free theory last time. And that state in general will be different from this state omega, which is the ground state of our interacting theory, where there's interesting scattering amplitudes to compute. And so what we'll do tomorrow then is relate this vacuum expectation value of a time ordered product of fields in the interacting theory to a vacuum expectation value in the free theory. And we'll do that by going to the interaction picture and using Dyson's formula, which we discussed with Vindhya. And finally, this vacuum expectation value can be related to a vacuum expectation value two fields. I'm already a product of two fields. And this is closely related to what you were just discussing with David, the propagator. The Wick's theorem relates these two quantities. So by this several three-step process, we'll be able to compute what we're interested in by relating it to first an object we can compute in our theory and then simpler objects. Yes, Mary?
I think I missed something. What is the T operator?
This is the time ordering symbol. And what it means is that the time ordered product of two operators, I'll choose field operators, but it's true for any time dependent operators in general. So this is equal, time ordering symbol means put the latest operators to the left, earliest operators to the right, and everything between in order. So this is equal to phi of x1, phi of x2, if x1, 0, is greater than x2, 0. And phi of x2, phi of x1, if phi 1, 0 is less than. This is latest to the left. So that's where we're going, both today and over the next 2 days. And then on Wednesday, we'll see a more direct way to relate the propagator directly to the scattering amplitude, or we won't quite get there. We'll get part of the way back using a equivalent technique to what we're going to do today and tomorrow. But it's a simpler in practice way, is Feynman diagrams. And directly relate the propagator, or that time-ordered expectation value, to either of these two quantities. That's where we're going. And before we start our discussion of the LSE reduction formula, I want to say a few more words about the free theory. Last time we discussed the vacuum state of the free theory, I just want to briefly say a few words about the states of particles and the Heisenberg picture. As you might expect, here we're working in the Heisenberg picture, and here all of these x's are four vectors. I haven't drawn any arrows, and it's intentional. We'll be working in the Heisenberg picture today, and then relating the Heisenberg picture and interaction tomorrow. Okay.
Between the ground state omega and the vacuum state zero.
So zero is, I'll reserve the zero to mean the ground state of the free Klein-Gordon theory. So the free Klein-Gordon theory has no interactions. So it's important, and as we saw, there's interesting features of it, namely the ground state energy. Is one interesting feature that's rather surprising. But if we want to study scattering, we are going to be looking at other theories. So we'll change our Lagrangian or Hamiltonian. And we'll do that in a way, we'll only be considering theories that are, in a sense, perturbations of this theory. This step is not something we're going to be able to do exactly. So over here, I haven't specified a Lagrangian, but you can imagine a Lagrangian that's the Klein-Gordon Lagrangian plus some perturbation. Change the Lagrangian, you're changing the Hamiltonian, and in general, you're changing the ground state. Okay. So in addition to the state we spent a lot of time talking about last time, the ground state, there are many other states in the Klein-Gordon theory. One of the simplest is a one-particle state. With three momentum k. And this state can be constructed by acting with a creation operator, aka dagger, on the ground state. So one particle state, I won't do the derivations, but you'll look at that in tutorial and on the quizzes. But the reason I say this is a one particle state, or it's reasonable to interpret this as a one particle state, is that if we act with the Hamiltonian on the state, we can find the energy of the state. The state has energy Ek squared is a squared plus m squared.
exactly what you'd expect the energy for a one particle state to be. And you can also construct a momentum operator to show that the state has momentum. Okay. So it's the expected properties of a one particle state. One thing that's worth keeping in mind about these one particle states is that we've already chosen the normalization of our ground state. Ground state is unit normalized, and that means that our one particle states are not unit normalized. This is 0, ak, ap dagger, 0, which we can compute just by using the commutation relations, and we get 2 pi cubed 2k delta of a minus p. And so this is a Lorentz invariant amplitude. We've chose our normalization choice for the field, and the creation and annihilation operators ensures that our amplitudes are Lorentz invariant, and our states are all Lorentz covariant without any extra factors. We'll discuss that fact in much more detail in QFT1, but it's just a claim for now. You can see from this expression that's a reasonable thing to make. Okay, so these are our one particle states. We also have multi-particle states with multiple particles. Each particle has definite momentum. And we can get these states just by acting with n creation operators. In the vacuum. And because our creation operators all commute, particles in Swan-Gordon theory are bosons. And we can construct a general state in this theory just by taking superpositions of these states. State space is spanned by the n particle state. Okay, so those are the states of the theory. Just want to say a few words about the Heisenberg picture. These operators commute with each other. So if I exchange K1 with K2.
Why we said to the case of photons? They all
they commute, therefore they're bosons.
Oh, okay. Misunderstanding.
Okay, the Heisenberg picture operators are time dependent. They're related to the Schrodinger pictures operators by multiplying by e to the iht on the left and e to the minus iht on the right. And so we discussed this detail with Bindia. For our purposes, I just want to comment briefly on the time dependence of the creation or annihilation operators. So although this is not something we're going to do frequently, for reasons I'll discuss in just a minute, write down the Heisenberg picture version of the creation operator or annihilation operator. And we can show using this definition and the BCH formula that this is just e to the si Okay. T times Schrodinger picture creation operator, or analogously for the annihilation operator, minus sign there. And so that means if we plug this into our formula for the field operator, the field Heisenberg picture field operator can be written as integral of the Lorentz invariant measure of AK with no time dependence, e to the I minus I A dot X plus AK dagger e to the plus I A dot X, again, A0 equal to EK. So the time dependence here just combines with the exponentials we had before to get an exponential of four vector. This is exactly what you'd expect based on our classical solution. To get the Schrodinger picture operators, we just set t equals 0. If we restore time, this is exactly the time dependence we'd expect. So in the free theory, these are time independent. Even though we're working in the Heisenberg picture, this is a four vector. So that this just follows from this equation that it's in general easier to work in terms of time independent creation and annihilation operators in the Heisenberg picture than this formula.
How do we know e to the minus iht is the operator that generates time translation and just Klein quarter, for example? Because the derivation in quantum mechanics depends on Schrodinger's equation.
So we're doing ordinary quantum mechanics. We're just dealing with a relativistic system. We're not modifying any of our postulates of quantum mechanics.
Do all of the modes, individual modes, satisfy Schrodinger's equation in a Klein quarter? Why is it e to the minus I Hamiltonian time even for the QFT? Not just the...
For the free theory, yes, the individual modes are independent, so they satisfy independently Schrodinger equation.
Where did the other
exponential
go with the A?
So what I've done here is I've used the BCH formula. I've skipped some steps. BCH says that e to the A b e to the minus A is b plus a b plus a b, et cetera. And so each you can use the commutator, so we know that AK dagger, hopefully I'm not making some sign mistakes, is okay. Get the signs right. EK. Oh no, this is the other order. So using this, we can evaluate each term, and we'll get a series expansion of an exponential we can reason.
There we use specific formula.
That's right. And this is not general.
Only for the Klein Gordon.
This is only for the Klein Gordon. So that's all I wanted to say about the free theory. Let's move on to the LSZ reduction formula. This stands for Lehmann, Szymanczyk, and Zimmermann, three physicists who originally found this formula. And our goal is to relate the scattering amplitude, FSI, to the vacuum expectation value, the time order product. So our goal to relate FSI this expression. And in order to do that, let me say a few more words about what FSI means first. So FSI, this is our Heisenberg picture expression. You can also write this in the Schrodinger picture as a final state at t equals plus infinity. So essentially, we're computing the overlap of this final state with some initial state at t equals minus infinity. Schrodinger picture expression. And here, this is the time evolution operator. From t equals minus infinity, t equals plus infinity. And we'll be focused on the case where our states are momentum eigenstates. In the free theory, these would be states that are created by creation operators acting on the vacuum. And we could have more than two particles in the initial or final state, but for today, let's focus on the case where we have two particles in the initial state. So we want to write down states like this in an interacting theory. We know how to do this in the free theory, but in order to do this in the interacting theory, we need to make some assumptions. And we'll need to make further assumptions to relate the operators that will appear in our expressions for these states to the field operator. So we're going to make a number of assumptions. Our first assumption will be that there exist some creation and annihilation operators. That satisfy the same commutation relations at equal time as our free annihilation operators. We'll assume these operators exist and that they satisfy at equal times the same commutation relations. This is a reasonable assumption. There should be some operator that takes us from the vacuum state to a state with one particle at a fixed time. Those operators should exist. We don't know that they're the same operators at all time. So in general, there could be some time dependence. On physical grounds, we expect there should be some operator that it takes us from the zero particle state to a one particle state and back. So we'll just give those some names and choose this normalization for their commutation relation.
Okay.
Yes.
You're saying in general, Lagrangian that has interactions, those it's a reasonable assumption to have creation and annihilation operators.
That's right. So that's our first assumption. That will let us define states like this. With that assumption, we can write down, say that our state I is a one dagger at minus infinity. Sorry. In the Schrodinger picture, this would be a one at zero. A two dagger. Zero. And our vacuum state. Where a let me change notation or make this here. Call this K3 and K4. So P1 and P2. Where AI is defined be AKI. I'm just not gonna write the K's every time.
What is exactly EK though? Like, it's the eigenvalues of some quantum system or something. Also, like, why we're allowed to don't have any time dependency on the like computation relation between these operators that we're introducing?
So we're only assuming this holds at equal times. So T here is the same.
It should be at time T, for example.
At time T. Yes. We're going to demand that this is the physical energy. That this is physical energy of this. This is what we would get if we measured the energy of the one particle state relative to the vacuum state.
But at time T.
At time T. So with this assumption, we can write our initial and our final states as creation operators acting on the vacuum. Now, in order to relate what we want to compute, the scattering amplitude, something we can compute more easily, if we're going to formulate our quantum field theory in terms of Lagrangian, which is a function of fields, we need to have some way to relate these creation operators or field operators.
Wasn't omega the ground state of the interacting field?
Yes.
So the definition of final state. But the interaction should be... Well, we don't have the interaction at plus minus infinity.
So here I'm writing down the Heisenberg picture states. Heisenberg picture states are time independent. So we have this time evolution operator S, which will act to evolve. You can think of it as evolving F to plus infinity and I to minus. I wrote this down in this state, F in the Schrodinger picture, all the time evolution would be in the state. So I would replace zeros here, plus infinity. But we're putting the time evolution in this explicit time evolution operator S. Okay. My next assumption is going to be that phi of x acting on the vacuum is a one particle state. At least for T going to plus or minus infinity. Yes?
Can we maybe go back for a little? I'm having trouble understanding what this omega does, actually. So when we go to gold, I don't see the right side. Like, how to visualize and like what it physically represents.
So we're taking it. You can think about this as two parts. It has a vacuum expectation value. It means I'm sandwiching some operators between the vacuum state. And what's in between is, well, there's a time ordering symbol. Let's forget about that for a minute. But it's a product of fields. We're asking, is there a correlation between the field value at different times? Different space-time locations, not just times, space-time locations. The time ordering means we're demanding that the operators are in a certain order. But we're at the question. This is measuring the correlation between the field values at different points in space-time. if we're measuring, if this were an electromagnetic field instead of a field, we'd be asking for a measurement of the electric and magnetic field at this point in space-time and that point in space-time, or that is our correlation or not. But that's the information of this object.
And why do we let this act on the vacuum state? What does the vacuum state?
We could ask. This quantity will come out of our calculation, but more generally, these correlation functions of the field, in fact, can contain all the information of the quantum field theory. But so, by considering operators of this type, we can by measuring operators of this type, we can get all the information about the quantum field theory. That's something we'll discuss more in QFT2, but these operators are have some inherent interest that we'll discuss later. That for now, our purposes of considering this object is, well, we're writing our theory. Our theory comes from a Lagrangian in terms of fields. If you want to calculate it, it's much easier to calculate something in terms of fields than in terms of these creation annihilation operators.
And maybe one final question. You said that we are trying to calculate how the different fields are correlated or different points of the field.
Mm-hmm.
Causally connected, or
not necessarily causally connected, but well, if this were zero, then if I measure, say it's the 2-point function, then that means I get no information about the measurement at the second space time point. If I know what's measurement is at the first space time point, there's a correlation, then I have some information.
So if you replaced your correlation from vacuum to some other states, some excited states, if the correlation for omega turns out to be zero, would it also imply that it would be zero for all states? Because
not necessarily. Sorry, go ahead.
So if this correlation turns out to be zero, would that also imply that if you replaced ket omega with some excited states, that would also be zero, or that is not an explicit implication?
Not in general.
Okay. Why did you assume that phi x, the effect of phi x on omega is in one particle state?
Well, this is true in the free theory. And if this is true in the interacting theory, that gives me a handle on how to relate the creation annihilation operators to the field operator. In particular, if this is true, that...
Sorry for interrupting. Isn't phi acting on omega on the vacuum state, even in the free theory, a superposition of one particle states? Because you have all the modes that you create.
It's not a momentum eigenstate, but it is a one particle state. I can act... One particle state means I take the number operator, which is defined to be 3k, 2 pi cubed, 3k, ak, ak dagger. I take this operator and act with it on this state. I get back 1 times the state. This operator basically counts the number of creation operators in the system. So both the states, AK dagger acting in the vacuum and phi of x acting in the vacuum, are number eigenstates. The AK dagger acting in the vacuum is a momentum eigenstate. Phi of x is not, but they're both number eigenstates. Okay, so in particular, this assumption tells us that at least asymptotically, phi of x should be linear in the creation operator. And if this field is real, it should also be linear. In the annihilation operator. This should be Hermitian. So this assumption gives us a handle on how to relate phi and the ladder operators. We need another assumption to fix the coefficients. And we'll assume that the form factor, which is a name for k phi omega, is the same as it is in the free theory as it is in the interacting theory. And on the quiz, you haven't done it yet, but you'll show that form factor is e to the ikx for the free theory. And we'll assume that that's also the case in the interacting theory. And this assumption fixes the coefficients. That tells us that there's an e to the I k dot x here, and e to the minus I k dot x. Here we're in the Heisenberg picture. And compared to the free theory, the difference between this expression is that in the free theory, the ladder operators are time independent. In the interacting theory, there's some time dependence, some extra time dependence. We also have the time dependence in these exponential factors. We could determine that time dependence, in principle at least, by using the Hamiltonian to determine the time evolution of these operators. In practice, that's difficult to do. And this expression for the interacting theory came out of these assumptions. For the free theory, came from an explicit solution to the equations of motion. So while the formulas look different, where they come from is rather different, and they do have this key difference that there's this extra time dependence interacting fields. So near the end of the lecture, we'll look at whether it's reasonable to make these assumptions. But with these assumptions, we get this relation between the field and ladder operators. And we can use that then to relate FSI with this correlation function or vacuum expectation value of time ordered product.
A's and A vectors in the interaction theory are different.
Yes.
Why do we know them by A and A?
They're different in the sense that they have different time dependence. At a fixed time, they behave just like in the free theory. But that extra time dependence is expected and crucial. You create an interacting theory. Well, let's suppose we have a theory where decay is allowed. And we should be able to have a one particle state that, after some time evolution, becomes not a one particle state anymore. Superposition of perhaps a one particle state and a two particle state. If that particle can do decay. So we don't want this operator to be conserved in the general theory. And one way to, natural way to implement that is to have time dependence. Creation and annihilation operators. Yes, Rokas?
Sorry, just to make sure I understand sort of the bigger picture here. Are we making up phis? Are we making up some operator phi to be whatever properties we want, such that we can come up with a nice formula that is a time order times a bunch of different phis that is equivalent to our scattering amplitude?
That's right.
Okay. But phi doesn't exist in S in any real way. Like phi was just a separate made up thing.
So this amplitude we're trying to calculate the amplitude for some initial state to evolve to some final state. In order to compute the time evolution, we'll need to specify a theory. We're not doing that yet. One way we could specify S is by specifying a Lagrangian. And that would allow us to compute S. But here we're saying before we even make any assumptions about what particular theory we're looking at, what can we say on rather general grounds with some reasonable assumptions?
I'm still a bit confused about why it's reasonable for phi of x acting on omega to be a one particle state, because like phi is made up of this, you know, this integral over all of phase space, right, or all of the d cubed k, that also includes like both creation and annihilation operators, right?
Yes.
Why is it fair to assume that you only have like one particle state as opposed to annihilating it or like a multi-particle state by acting phi?
So we're only imposing that this is one particle state at asymptotic times. So we want to do perturbation theory. And if we're going to do perturbation theory, then it's, there should be able to match our interacting theory to our free theory that we're perturbing around in the asymptotic past and future. If we looked at time evolution for a short time and we're starting with some perturbation around the Klein-Gordon-Hamiltonian or Klein-Gordon-Lagrangian, for a short time evolution, it shouldn't be that different. And so we do time evolution for no time, starting with a state of the Klein-Gordon theory. We still have the Klein-Gordon theory. This is reasonable, I think, to expect, assuming that perturbation theory works in this limit. In intermediate times, maybe it breaks down.
So it's like something, it's a boundary condition of sorts we're forcing onto R phi that we're
creating. Yes, that's right. That's all right?
K dot x here is a four vector dot product.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's basically the Heisenberg picture phi of x, right?
That's right.
So ak of t implicitly has e to the power iota kt, and then ak at t equals to zero. So shouldn't that be k vector dot x vector?
No, there's time dependence in two spots. So this factor is the free theory time dependence, but there's some additional time dependence. We could combine these factors, but it'll be more convenient to leave it explicit in two spots.
Suppose we had phi at t equal to zero. Then we won't have e to the power I e dot t because t is zero. And now we evolve this using the Heisenberg picture. So then we'll have ak of t and ak dagger of t.
Mm-hmm.
So why do we have k dot x as a four vector?
So this here is the Heisenberg. This is not quite the. We've chosen to write our time dependence here in a way to match this formula. In this formula, in the free theory, this is time independent. This is all the time dependence is in this factor. We could choose to break things up differently. It would make our life much more difficult. So I'm making that choice really for simplicity of where to put the time dependence.
Also, Vincent said that the Hamiltonian is different for
yes, I'm not going to specify a Hamiltonian or Lagrangian in this theory, but yes, it's something different. Okay.
Sorry, Dan, real quick.
Yes, Mary?
By the comment, if real, for the a of k t?
If phi is real.
Oh, I see.
Which is the case we're considering now. In tutorial tomorrow, we'll relax this assumption.
I'm sorry, where does the last assumption come from, where inner product is equal to exponential something?
So this is true in the free theory. Mm-hmm. And it's convenient to have some condition that allows us to determine these coefficients. So we're just going to demand that.
So we can see it in the free theory if we try to construct this as well, right? Because since we haven't checked it, but okay.
You will check it in the quiz. It's a few line calculation. Okay. So our FSI with these assumptions, we can write it in terms of the ladder operators, and it becomes a 3 of plus infinity, 4 plus infinity, a 1 dagger minus infinity, a 2 dagger minus infinity. And what we need to do is relate the ladder operators to field operators. And given we have this formula, we can do that.
Sorry, I must have missed something. So in the operator, the field operator that we just written there, so the annihilation operator would evolve with time, just as it should evolve in the Heisenberg picture, it would be IK, EKT times AK dagger. And if you replace that equation right in there, I think your time independence is just kind of vanish, isn't it? Because you have, let's say, e to the power of iota k dot x, so it is e to the minus iota EKT times e to the iota EKT there.
This equation only holds in the free theory.
Yeah.
Over here, we're working in the interacting.
That was exactly the choice you made, because you wanted to, in the limit of free theory, you wanted that phi to give exactly that equation, so you did.
Yes. Okay. So in order to relate the ladder operators to the field operators, there's a useful identity discussed, and the result is that a one dagger plus infinity minus a one dagger of minus infinity minus I roll d4x of e to the k1 dot x t squared plus m physical squared I of x. Did I get all the signs right? No, there's a minus sign. And we can call this integral, call it I1 dagger. So that's a result. And we'll use this identity repeatedly to get our final result. Well, that's a useful identity.
Because when you took the dagger from F, it would be A4A3.
Yes, it should. Okay. Yes.
Why can you write the scattering amplitude as the actions of A4, A3, A1, A2i plus and minus of it?
So I'm just taking the assumption that our initial state is this, final state is that, and the time evolution operator acts to evolve the initial state back to minus infinity, the final state to plus infinity. Or alternatively, if you write it down in the Schrodinger picture, you directly have the Schrodinger picture final state would be this state with the zeros replaced by plus.
Where did the identity come from?
I'm going to prove it in a minute, but this is a key result. And before I derive it, just one comment. So here we've got the Klein-Gordon operator. So if this were a free theory, this term would be zero. Klein-Gordon operator acting on the field would be zero. That's our equation of motion. In an interacting theory in general, the equation of motion is different, so this will no longer be zero. And another key point is that this mass here is the physical mass. At no point in today's lecture am I going to specify Lagrangian or Hamiltonian explicitly. This will come out of the relativistic dispersion relation. T squared is k squared plus m squared. So we won't need to assume anything about the Lagrangian formula. Or anything more than that the Lagrangian will satisfy those equations. Okay. So let's prove this. So the first thing I can do is write this difference as an integral. Then I'm going to use a formula for a1 dagger t that a1 dagger t is the integral d3x of minus I the derivative of the minus I k1.
The first line
d1 dagger dt? Yes. And so a1 is equal to this minus I integral of this times d0 I of x plus I j I of x. And so this expression is the same relation between a dagger and phi as in the free theory. In one of the quizzes, you'll derive that if you haven't already. And the fact that phi has this form and that phi is a one particle state as t goes to plus or minus infinity implies that the same derivation you'll do in the quiz in the free theory works for the interacting theory. You'll need the additional assumption that the time dependence goes to zero to make the assumption that time dependence goes to zero at plus or minus infinity. With that extra assumption, your derivation for the free theory will work. You get this expression for the ladder operator. We can do the derivative. Four terms, two of them will cancel, and I'll be left with to the minus I k 1 dot x e 0 squared minus e k squared.
Is that
k1 or k1? Yeah. Should be plus. So that there are two other terms, they'll cancel. And here, I can relate using relative dispersion relation ek squared to be k squared plus m squared. This is the physical mass, not assuming anything about the Lagrangian. Place that with this, and I get e to the minus. So minus I k 1 dot x. I can integrate by parts twice to replace the k squared with a spatial derivative. And then I can combine these time and space derivatives. Get the Gaussian four dimension. Okay, so that's where this derivation comes from. And with that useful identity, we just need a few lines to get the LSE reduction. So our expression, FSI, is omega A4 of plus infinity 3 plus infinity dagger. And this expression is already time ordered, so I'm not changing anything if I insert time ordering symbol here. I then use the useful identity. I get 2 to the 4 terms. I won't write them all down, but I'll just write down 2 of them. So if I use the useful identity, I'll have a term where so we'll replace these these ladder operators with ladder operators that are opposite. If it's a plus infinity, I'll replace it with a ladder operator minus infinity plus the integral. If I just looking at the terms with the ladder operators, I'll have a term a4 of minus infinity, a3 of minus infinity, a1 plus infinity, a2 at plus infinity. There'll be many mixed terms with some a's and some i's. And then at the end, there will be a term that's i4, i3, i1, dagger i2. And claim is that this term will vanish. This term is a time ordering symbol that moves the annihilation operators to the right, because at the earliest times, they'll annihilate the vacuum. It'll also move the creation operators to the left, but it will annihilate the Bra vacuum. This term vanishes.
Something that I didn't understand, when, where did the time ordering in the first line came from?
The expression was already time ordered, so I haven't changed anything if I insert it.
Can you explain again why was the first term 0?
So this time ordering symbol pushes A4 and A3 to the right because those are at minus infinity, where they annihilate the vacuum. And the same for the creation operator, so annihilate the Bra vacuum. And that's true for all the terms here that have at least one creation operator or annihilation operator. All of these terms are 0. And we're only left with this last term. And so this gives us our expression for the LSE reduction formula. We get a factor of I from each of these expressions. We'll have integral before psi. Let's call this J. Then we have e to the minus I times a J. Kj dot xj. We have a d squared j plus m squared. Finally, the promised vacuum expectation value of the time ordered product of field. And let me just take a minute to explain the notation. So here, lambda j plus 1 for initial states, and minus 1 for final states. And by dj squared here, I mean d squared dx. J d mu x j nu. So this is the Laplacian with respect to xj. And phi I mean phi at xi. This is our key result. The difference in the signs between the initial and final states comes from the fact that the i's and i daggers have a different sign here. I take the conjugate of this sign, it'll change. So that's our key result. We've related the scattering amplitude we want to compute to this vacuum expectation value we can compute. This is a good spot to take a break. Let's break for 5 minutes. Okay. So I'd like to spend some time discussing how reasonable it is to make these assumptions, what that tells us about our theory. Yes, Mary?
We can talk about this later after class since we don't have much time, but why again are the terms like a4 minus infinity, a3 minus infinity, like those terms, why are they all zero?
Because of the time ordering symbol, which pushes the annihilation operators to the right, because all of our annihilation operators, after we've used the useful identity, are at minus infinity, but they're at the earliest possible time. Time ordering pushes the earliest times to the right, and vice versa for the creation operators. So let's check, let's discuss our assumptions and how reasonable those are. So we made a number of assumptions. So the 5x is asymptotically a one-particle state. So if it's a one-particle state, what does that mean? That means, well, it should be orthogonal to the zero-particle state, the vacuum. So we should have that vacuum expectation value of the field is zero. It should also be orthogonal to multi-particle states. And our other assumption was that the form factor, k phi omega, was e to the ikx, the same as it is in the free theory. OK. So let's see, or think more carefully about these assumptions. What can we say in general about the vacuum expectation value of the field? Or the scalar field. Well, we're assuming our theory is Poincaré invariant. So this, and one thing we can do is we can write 5x as some translation operators times the field operator at zero, the translation operator. So we can think about this equation as a generalization of the relationship between the Heisenberg picture and the Schrodinger picture. Translate the field by putting these exponentials of the translation operator. And if we plug this into the vacuum expectation value, what we see is that omega 5x omega is omega 50 omega, because the vacuum by assumption is translation. So that tells us that this vacuum expectation value is not a function of space-time, it's a constant. At any point in space-time, it's equal to the value of this zero. And because by construction, our amplitudes are all Lorentz invariant, this is just a Lorentz invariant number. So, well, we write down an arbitrary theory, it's not necessarily true that the vacuum expectation will be zero. In general, the vacuum expectation will just be some complex number. So there's an easy fix, an easy way we can modify our theory so that it has no vacuum expectation value.
Why is it Lorentz invariant?
It's not something we have or will discuss in great detail, but the claim is that all of our amplitudes in this course are Lorentz invariant because of the way we've chosen to normalize things. Basically, our fields will transform trivially under Lorentz transformations. You will build up machinery of how to perform Lorentz transformations on these states in general in QFT1.
Vacuum states are invariant under time and spatial translations, temporal.
Yes.
Is that also an extra assumption? Because is that also an assumption?
That's also an assumption. Yes, we're assuming our vacuum state exists and is Poincaré invariant. It's a reasonable assumption.
Why? I mean, aren't they just a particle be created out of thin air?
Well, experimentally, we've never seen a preferred reference frame. The vacuum state had non-trivial transformation properties that would be hard to
experimental intuition.
So we can fix this problem if for some reason the theory we write down initially has a vacuum expectation value, then we can't use the LSE reduction formula in the form we've written it down, but there's an easy way we can change our theory to make this assumption hold. So we can define a new field operator, 5x, which is our original 5x minus v. So phi has a vacuum expectation value, phi tilde won't. So we can shift, and we'll assume we do this, and I'm going to drop the tilde going forward. So we can make this assumption work just by doing a shift.
But this is true only at k equals plus minus infinity.
This holds for all time. This is for all t, for all x. We actually only need this to be zero at plus or minus infinity, but we get for free that if it's zero at plus or minus infinity, it's zero for all time.
Sorry, did you time, like, is that a four vector translation?
Yeah. Yes, this is a four vector translation. Okay, let's move on to this assumption next. Do the same sort of analysis for the form factor. there's another name for this expression. So if we rewrite phi of x, there's a phi of 0 using space-time translations, we get is that this equal to k e to the I e dot x, phi of 0, e to the minus I e dot x, omega.
Can you just check the first part of the assumption? What happened to the second one? Because
I'll discuss this later. Okay. We're doing this the first, the second. We'll do this one third. This is more challenging. One and three follow from this, but in a sense, one is talking about the overlap of phi omega with a zero particle state. Two is talking about its overlap with the one particle state, and three is with a particle state. There is another reason that this order makes sense. Okay, so this part we can simplify. What is this?
Omega,
yes. Now this part doesn't just give us k. K transforms non-trivially. If we transform k, we'll get an e to the I k dot x k phi of 0. And so this is the factor we want. If this extra factor here were 1, our assumption would be satisfied. In general, this is not 1. But as I've claimed many times, and I'm not going to prove in this course, all of our amplitudes will be Lorentz invariants. So this is a Lorentz invariant function, which can depend only on k squared, in fact, can be Lorentz invariant. Function of k squared, the only thing it can possibly have any dependence on. That's also a function of k squared is equal to m squared. So this is not actually a function of k dependent. So again, this is just a Lorentz invariant number, not a function. So I can write this as e to the ik x times some function I'll call 1 over n. It's a number I'll call 1 over n. So in general,
the functionality of k, I'm sorry.
The claim is that this is Lorentz invariant.
Yeah.
So if it's Lorentz invariant, it can only depend on k squared.
Sure.
K is the only argument here. K squared is equal to m squared. So k squared does not actually depend on k for a physical particle. So that means it's just a number. It's independent of k, independent of x.
Why did you claim that that's Lorentz invariant as a start? Because you said it's just can only be a function of k squared. Why can't it be a function of k, let's say?
Then it wouldn't be Lorentz invariant.
How would you know that it's not? We'll think it is.
We'll look in QFT1. You'll look at how all of these operators transform under Lorentz transformations. That's a claim for now. You'll spend a week or more on that topic, so it's too much to go over in a few minutes here. Okay, so in general, this is not just e to the ikx. E to the ikx times some number. So again, our assumption for the LSE reduction formula is not automatic, but it's rather easy to fix. So before we shifted to get rid of the unwanted constant, here we can do something similar. What should we do to get rid of this unwanted constant? How should we redefine I of x? Right, we should, it should be n. I'm sorry. Rescale. And so then we can, we'll just assume we do this. So you can drop the tilde. These two assumptions are not automatically satisfied, but we can make our theory satisfy these assumptions by shifting and rescaling.
Is the rescaling the same thing as redefining our units of measurement? Because I can see that the Lagrangian would be invariant under that transformation, but the Lagrangian won't have the same form if I rescale my fields.
It's not the same thing as engineering units, not in general.
I mean, so the transformation has to leave the Lagrangian invariant, right?
No, we're not demanding that our Lagrangian is invariant. We're trying to make our field satisfy the assumptions of the LHC reduction.
But what if they describe different physics than the one we started with? If we can transform the fields as...
If you want the action to be an extremum, I don't think that would make a difference, right? Because if it's just proportional to multiples of phi squared, stuff like that, you could just factor out the n, and then still take the variation, set it equal to zero. Is that because the physical meaning wouldn't change if you just rescale phi in that way? So the Lagrangian might not stay exactly the same, but the action wouldn't change.
I'll just make a brief comment, and I wanted to say some other thing, but I'm happy to continue the discussion after class. It's in general the physics doesn't change if you do a field redefinition. That's not at all obvious from what we've done. It will be much more obvious in the path integral formulation. I do want to move on. I'm happy to continue discussion after class. After class, my apologies, but I want to say just a few more words before we finish. And we did start a few minutes late, so but I'll be quick. Okay, I just moved it, but this one turns out to be automatic for massive particles. There are details in the lecture notes. I'd be happy to discuss those further with anyone who's interested. This is more technical to show this, but the result is that that's automatically satisfied. Okay, so let's suppose we want to apply LHC reduction formula to a theory with interactions. One theory we could write down, we just take the Klein-Gordon theory. And add a new term, an interaction term. Say we want to have a field where three particles can interact at the same point in space-time. So this seems like a reasonable thing to do. But if I write down this theory, it doesn't satisfy the assumption of the LHC reduction formula. So I'm not justified in studying this theory with the LHC reduction formula. Instead, I can almost do that, but I need to shift and rescale. And then after that shifting and rescaling, and I'll also rename some of our parameters, our theory in general will look like some extra factor in front of our kinetic term. This term is called the kinetic term, even though it has a gradient part as well. An extra term in front of our mass term. we'll have an extra coefficient in front of our interaction. And we can also get a new term. We'll get a new phi-dependent term. Shifting the field, we'll generally get a linear term. And constant terms, which won't affect anything, so I'm not going to write that down. So this is not a form of Lagrangian we can use in general to do perturbation theory. In general, we're going to have to do something like this. And if we use the LSE reduction formula to compute our scattering amplitudes, that will impose constraints on these coefficients, the z's and the y's.
Besides rescaling and shifting, so isn't there, right now, don't you have a few constraints on z, phi, zm, and zg?
Yes, and we'll look at those constraints explicitly near the end of this course. But this is something in general we have to do, and this is related to renormalization. Renormalization is required if we want to use the LSE reduction formula. So the assumptions we made for the LSE reduction formula will put some constraints on these z's and the y's. We're going to ignore this fact for now, but we'll come back to it in a few lectures. But for now, we will assume that the zi's are all 1 and the y's are all 0. And this in general will be true at leading order in perturbation theory. So we're going to make this, keep in mind that we have to do this. I'm going to go beyond leading order, but we're going to ignore it and develop the perturbation theory without worrying about this first, and then add this in at near the end of the course.
So is the LSE reduction formula only valid to leading order and perturbation theory?
It's valid at beyond leading order, but the z's and the y's will not be 1 or 0 beyond leading order. Okay, thank you. Apologies for going slightly over time. Yes, I'd be happy to answer any other questions or further discussion.